Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's the Razzball Fantasy Football Podcast. I am B-Don, joined, as always, by my co-host, Donkey Teeth. How's it going over there, DT?
What's happening, B-Don? Week two in the books. Let's talk some fantasy football.
Yeah, man. I mean, there was a lot of big scores out there this week. I mean, if you went against anyone from the Dolphins, I just pray that you had somebody to balance it out on your side, because if not,
you needed a Raven.
Ugly real fast.
You needed Lamar Jackson, yeah. If you're going,
yeah,
against,
you
needed
Lamar or like
Josh Allen,
and Diggs,
right?
Or like, you know, ARSB. You needed something. You needed something to balance those scales. Otherwise, it was an ugly week if you went against them. So hopefully for our listeners, you didn't have that in too many of your leagues, or maybe you were on the winning side, and then congratulations. But yeah, let's talk about the Dolphins. I mean, the answer to Tyreek or Waddle through 2 weeks is that you wanted them both. So, I mean, obviously huge, huge games here. You know, Tyreek goes 11 for 190 and two. Waddle goes 11 for 171 and two. I mean, if football fields were longer, they would have gone for like an infinite number of yards. But I mean, what do you do here? The Dolphins just a high powered offense right now, and you have to start everybody involved with at least those three.
Yeah, I think it's those three. I don't think that you're necessarily running out to start, you know, the new waiver wire gem Raheem Mostert this week, or Chase Edmonds, who is suddenly an afterthought. But yeah, I think those three are must starts. Absolutely. We didn't do our normal slate of preseason shows, so I can't remember if we talked about this last week, but I was super high on Tua. So, you know, one awesome week, I'm ready to take a victory lap, man.
I mean, he had a solid week in week one as well. So, you know, it's 2 weeks. I would feel like he's proven that he's not a failure as an NFL quarterback. Granted, he has, you know, a few amazing weapons around him, but yes, I was also in on Tua. I've always liked Tua coming out of the draft process. So yes, and you know me, once I've kind of made a draft process, unless there's some kind of injury or a reevaluation needed, yeah. I mean, I just assume they're going to be good at some point. Like, you know, Justin Watson finally proven me right. All these years later, Justin Watson has deserved a spot somewhere.
Right. Beaton is still in on Jamarcus Russell.
No, come on. That was always going to go bad. Yes, but all three, I think, must starts. Is where is Tua climbing, I guess, in your rankings at quarterback? I mean, we could talk about this next week. You know, I guess we can start there if you want. They're going to Buffalo, or either home. Sorry, they're home for Buffalo. Buffalo has just been running people over, but so has Miami. So this is going to be a fun matchup to see where the Dolphins are. How do you feel about Tua in this matchup?
Pretty good. Again, I mean, there's definitely a chance that you ended up with two quarterbacks on your roster and he's the second one and you've got a tough choice this week. But generally, you know, if he's your only quarterback, you're obviously starting him. You're no longer, if you were looking at him as like a streaming option, I think you lock him in and he's going to be better than what's on your wire, even in a tough matchup versus the Bills. You know, the Bills defense looks legit. So it's not my first choice to start a guy against the Bills, but Tua's got to be, he's got to be a locked in top 10 rest of the season. Probably a little bit higher than that for me. I probably put him just outside that, you know, that tier of Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts. He's probably there with the banged up Justin Herbert kind of tier. So what's that put him, like 7-8 rest of season, somewhere in that range?
Yeah, it depends on where you're going with a few of the guys that were kind of split amongst the rankers. So it depends on what you're doing. Well, Burrow wasn't really split. So like Herbert, Burrow, Burrow's obviously struggled to start the season. You know, Brady and Rodgers, the two old guys, and Stafford, we can throw Stafford in that mix along with Russ. Like, I feel like those four were anywhere from like 7 to like 14 in people's rankings, just depending on where people were throwing a few different of the swing guys.
Yeah, I think he's like right there with Burrow. I think I still give the edge to Burrow. It's such a high powered offense, but that's right behind him in my rankings rest of season.
Yeah, I think I may actually lean towards Tua And only because we know he's getting half his games in Miami, whereas Burrow's in Cincinnati. And Cincinnati, while not very snowy, gets real gross at times. So just kind of the weather factor. And again, the O-line for Burrow looks just awful. Again, like I thought it was going to be better this year. It may be better slightly on the run side, but like the pass defense has not looked good. And Burrow's holding the ball. I mean, that's just what he does. He's just a playmaker, so he's just going to hold the ball. But he's not getting a lot of time consistently.
Let me ask you, it sounds like you're going to be starting to almost no matter what, but well, Burrow's got the Jets this week. If you happen to have both those guys, you got to give the edge to Burrow this week.
Yeah, you got to go Burrow this week. I mean, that's a matchup that you have to go for. Absolutely. Although the Jets aren't, I mean, the Jets haven't looked like complete failures this year.
The Jets.
So, you know, there's at least a little bit of hope for the Jets, I think. I mean, they still gave up 30 to the Browns, so I'm not really, don't take this out of context, but like they're not completely horrible. But yes, I think in that particular instance, I'm with you.
How about, let me just give you a couple guys and then we can move on from this. Mm-hmm. So how about Stafford at Arizona, Kirk Cousins versus the Lions, and Russell Wilson versus the 49ers? Are you starting two over those three?
So I know Stafford was the first one. I'm probably going to over Stafford.
And then Cousins versus the Lions was the second one I gave you.
I'm also going to there. Stafford, you know, that one I can definitely be talked into. But over Cousins, I'm going with Tua.
And then you got Russ at home against the 49ers.
The Niners are a tougher matchup. I'm going to there, and if they're both going to be in tough matchups, I'll go with the one that's looked good and not in a new situation, really. I mean, they definitely added, you know, Tyreek Hill to the mix, but he's not moving teams, offenses and all that.
Yeah.
I guess he is a new offense. I'm just lying now.
it's a coin flip in these territory, but I'll go with Tua as well.
Russ has looked a little rough to start.
He has. You got to imagine he comes around, but yeah, maybe if you've got options, maybe benching him is not the worst play.
Yeah, I agree. There's the Trey Lance injury, which is, you know, big news just by itself. And then, you know, we get Jimmy G coming back in. What does this do for you for the weapons in San Francisco? Do you feel a little bit maybe better about Debo? Does this hurt your Ayuk, you know, feelings if Kittle gets back in? Where are you at on like the three main pass catchers here?
You know, I'm not going to change a whole lot. I think if anything, slight boost to Kittle and Debo. They've already shown that type of connection and chemistry with Jimmy G. He's, you know, he knows the offense. He's had success in it before. So there was definitely a little bit of uncertainty with Trey Lance. So yeah, you know, pretty lateral, but slight upgrade if anything.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I mean, nothing much, I think, changes in regards to the way that the Niners want to attack people in regards to rushing versus passing. I just think it comes in a different form now.
Yeah,
they're not going to run options with Jimmy G. They'll just turn around and hand the ball off. Right, but they're still going to run the ball a lot. Like if they have their choice in it.
Yeah, maybe a slight benefit to Jeff Wilson and
Jordan Mason.
Mason? Yeah, Mason would be number two.
I mean, they do have Marlon Mack on the practice squad. So once he gets up to speed, I don't know if he's. I really don't know where Marlon Mack is. Like, we've only seen him in like very small glimpses since his injury, so not really counting on anything there. But he is there.
Just yeah, I think Mason
deep leagues.
If Mason snuck by on your waivers last week, he's if you need running back options, you know, Davis Price is now hurt, and Davis Price saw all that work in garbage time. I think he had 14 carries or something like that. So Mason will now slide in as number two. You got to believe.
Yeah, I think so. Amon-Ra St. Brown, we mentioned him off the top. I mean, he had a great game. He's had 12 targets in both games. He had three touchdowns in two games now. I mean, he looks great. Goff is just peppering him with targets right now. He tied some random stat with Antonio Brown and Michael Thomas for number of receptions, eight receptions in three consecutive games. Like, where are you at on Amon-Ra St. Brown for, I mean, I think for the season, it's clear he's going to be a number one, like a WR1 option. But, like, I mean, even Dynasty, like, where are we talking about him fitting in amongst the top Dynasty receivers?
Yeah, I'm not ready to crown him into, like, the top wide receiver tier, but I'm not that far off, right? He's probably just outside that Diggs, Jefferson, Chase, Cup tier. Throw Devontae Adams in there, too. So he's, like, right there for me with, say, Debo and A.J. Brown and Tyreek Hill. I mean, A.J. Brown, there's an argument for him in that top tier, too, to be honest. So, yeah, I think Amon-Ra and Jaylen Waddle, I think they fall into the same bucket where they're threatening that top tier and they're going to be up there for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I already had Waddle pretty much up there. I mean, he looked amazing last year. So he's already joined that group for me. I guess let me ask you a few names here. And these are the ones that I've kind of been going back and forth on because it's guys that I particularly like, and like CeeDee Lamb, who is looked great, but at the same time, like, the production hasn't really been there like it has with St. Brown. So where are you at on the CeeDee Lamb versus St. Brown? Is this the time to make that move and trade St. Brown for CeeDee Lamb while they're kind of heading in different directions? Or would you be just giving up on, like, the future, you know, a future elite receiver in St. Brown?
I think that in the if you're going for it this year, I think they're close enough long term that I would give the edge to St. Brown, but I still long term would rather have CeeDee Lamb. So if you're not in contention in your dynasty league and you're looking towards the future, I'd be okay making that swap and taking CeeDee, but they're close enough. You know, it really is a coin flip to me at this point long term.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you in regards to, it depends on how much you're in for this year. Like, if you're, I mean, it's hard to tell, but you know your team, you know your league. If your team is not amongst the top half of the league, then you're not truly really in contention. If you're just, like, holding on because St. Brown's had a couple of big weeks, then maybe reevaluate and see where you actually are. But I'm with you. I think if you're in it for this season, it's St. Brown, but I'm still going CeeDee long term. I just feel like he's such a great talent. He's so good that it's gonna eventually pop. He's in the right situation. And there's a slight concern on me with St. Brown. While he does look amazing, I don't want to take anything away from his performance. Like, it's the Lions. We know that they change coaches a lot, and also they're probably changing quarterbacks sooner rather than later, because they're probably not paying Goff $30 million next year. That's probably not happening. They can save up to, I believe, $25 million by cutting Goff. So unless he's willing to restructure, he's probably not staying in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing.
I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing either, but it's just a thing that you would have to deal with potentially. Again, in either 23 or 24, a quarterback swap, which means maybe a little bit of growing pains as you're pushing for it, if, like, your team is built for next year.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay. So after that ramble about absolutely nothing, let's go on to some of the rookie wide receivers. They started showing out this week. Garrett Wilson had 14 targets. He had 8 receptions, 102 yards, 2 touchdowns. Where you at on Garrett Wilson? I mean, really, the question was kind of like Wilson, London, Burks. So far, they're all looking pretty solid. Burks has kind of the least production of the group, but still has looked real good in his playing time.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably all owned, right? In your
they've got
12
right?
team, 10 team leagues. I think Garrett Wilson could be out there, and maybe Treylon Burks, but these guys are all exciting. I mean, I want all of them. I think you and I are probably on the same page. We love the rookies, and these guys are all very talented. And when you see that kind of target share out of the gates like this, it's just kind of eye-popping, exciting. A couple of these guys are going to go off for, I'm not going to say Jamar Chase seasons, but, you know, like DK Metcalf, AJ Brown type rookie seasons, at least one of them is going to, probably two. They're all such good talents, and they don't have a ton of competition for targets. So I'm in. I guess we should probably rank them rest of season. I'm going to go, this is probably going to be a little bit out on a limb compared to consensus, but I'm going to rank Treylon Burks number one. I think he's got less competition. Drake London, he doesn't have a ton of competition either. None of them had. Olave's got Mike Thomas.
I mean, you got Elijah Moore, so that's tough.
Yeah. Olave's got Michael Thomas. So, I mean, you love all those targets for sure. But I think I'll rank them Treylon, Garrett Wilson, toss up between Olave and Drake London, slight edge to Drake London. But I like them all, man. It's really close. This is tough ranking them.
Yeah, it is tough because, you know, their situations are kind of in flux. So it's different than making a dynasty ranking for them, because that's kind of looking at the skill set and saying, okay, who's going to be the best long term. But for the rest of the season, it is hard looking at them. I would say Burks is probably on the bottom just because the Tennessee offense is predicated so much on the run. And unless you have AJ Brown freakish like efficiency, you don't really get true wide receiver one numbers unless he eventually, which he needs to build towards, like being the true one in that system. He's still not getting the snaps that Treylon Burks in Tennessee. So it's Wilson or London for me, really. I would say it's probably Wilson, I think, just based on the upside. And this sounds crazy, but the upside of the Jets offense over the upside of the Falcons offense. I just feel like the Falcons offense is so limited in what they can do this year. And whereas the Jets have, you know, Flacco's been at least spreading the ball around well, and then peppering Wilson this week, obviously. And then, you know, eventually we get Zach Wilson back, and he looked okay until he got injured. And I think he at least brings some upside to the table.
Yeah. I mean, if we're looking at just sheer offenses around him and potential, I think it's Olave, which I ranked him last, but it's so close. Like, you could really convince me on any of these guys, to be honest. I guess my argument for Treylon is that we've seen Tannehill have success with AJ Brown as a rookie in the past. So it's not foreign. But again, these guys all got a shit ton of targets here. So yeah. None of the quarterbacks are afraid to throw to him.
And I mean, if we're talking about, you know, if we want to bring in the quarterback discussion, I mean, we're not really sure Tannehill's going to be there starting for the whole season, right? I mean, there's obviously getting blown out,
right?
But they've already made a switch once. Once you make that switch once, it all of a sudden becomes a little bit easier to make the switch, even though it was in blowout time. I do like that Olave is you know, right there amongst the leaders in New Orleans on snaps. So he's not getting any kind of rookie entry treatment. He was second on snaps just behind Michael Thomas this week. And he was second in snaps behind, actually, I think he led them in snaps in the week one. So I do like Olave. I'm a little worried about the Saints offense just because Jameis is dealing with several minor fractures in his back, which sounds really bad to me. So I'm a little worried if Jameis leaves, what that offense becomes.
Yeah, I don't know. I need to know more about that. Like, it doesn't sound good, but I don't know. Tiny little hairline fractures.
Yeah, ever so like he gets hit from behind for a living. That you know, it's not a big deal. We'll see. So,
but, I guess the thing on Tannehill, just to circle back around to that, I mean, like the reason that I'm not super concerned yet is because Derrick Henry hit the bench the same time. So to me, that's not like quarterback change punishment. It's like, hey, second team's coming in, we're getting blown out, go get a little bit of practice kind of a thing, you know?
Right. No, I completely agree with that statement. I'm just saying that I don't think it's as far off as maybe we thought it might be. Come, you know, preseason when we're talking about who's the quarterback, because Malik looked good. Tannehill has looked kind of shaky. Obviously, this week it was really bad, but the whole offense was really bad.
Yeah, the Bills defense stuff.
And the one other rookie that we need to throw in this discussion is Jahan Dotson, who had 5 targets, 4 receptions, 59, and a touchdown. On the touchdown was on a long throw in the end zone. So, I mean, I think he belongs at least in this discussion. I don't know that he's moving above Wilson, London, or Burks for me, but if Jameis leaves, I think I'm taking Dotson over Olave.
Yeah, that would be concerning for sure. I mean, Dotson's only got 10 targets in 2 weeks, so it's hard to put him in this conversation. He's been super touchdown dependent. It's nice, you know, he's found the end zone 3 times in 2 weeks, so that's not nothing. But yeah, it's just you can't bank on that continuing. You need that usage, and when these guys are getting teens targets, that's a whole different game.
Yeah, in regards to the targets, you're right. But Dotson has been playing. Like, he is number one or number two in snaps both weeks with Terry McLaurin. So he is the clear two to Terry. I guess that does limit him some, just because there is a clear two there, or a clear one there. So that just in terms of what he can do, but that's not necessarily a terrible thing. That does worry me with Treylon Burks a little bit. Just they haven't been giving him snaps. Obviously, this week is really hard to take anything away. But in week one, it was 37%. And then week two, it was 45%. You got to think he was heading towards like a 65, 70%. But still, he's not leading the team in snaps. It's Robert Woods, and it's been Nick Westbrook Akinye to be the 1 and 2 so far. But
yeah, you know,
yeah, I think that's changing.
Right. That's exactly. I mean, that's kind of the standard for rookie wide receivers, which is why it's so exciting about guys like Garrett Wilson and
London, Olave. Dotson, and, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All those guys. Yeah, absolutely. All right, a guy who's not a rookie, but he's in a new place, and it's kind of like getting a rookie because he didn't really pop in Arizona. Christian Kirk had 6 targets, 6 receptions, 78 yards, 2 touchdowns, following up on his week one, 12 targets, 6 receptions, 117-yard performance. I mean, people talked about them overpaying Kirk. I mean, it doesn't seem like they overpaid him after these first 2 games.
Right, were you in on Kirk in the preseason?
I was like, it was an ADP thing. It depended on the draft I was in. He went really early in some drafts, and then he fell in a number one. So it just depended on where he was. But I've always liked Kirk from a talent standpoint. He's had some trouble staying on the field, and then he just never fit the Arizona offense for some reason.
Right. I was he was one of the late risers for me when all the pieces kind of came together. He started to get that preseason hype. He had a really good preseason. And then, you know, it just kind of fit in with this narrative about the Jaguars paying him. Obviously, they saw something. And I brought this up. I must have been on a show with Bobby, but like, I kind of wonder if Trevor Lawrence didn't identify him as like, hey, we're going to get you an alpha receiver, who do you want kind of a thing. And maybe he picked out Christian Kirk because they seem to have chemistry, don't they? It's like, I didn't watch the game. I watched Red Zone, and it was like every time they went to the Jaguars, it's Christian Kirk. I was like, this guy must have 15 targets, right? And then turns out he only had 6, but he caught every single one of them. But right. It just seemed like in the big situations, Lawrence was really looking to Kirk, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been Kirk, and it was Ingram as well. So I think those are the two.
Ingram had a nice game, didn't he?
Ingram did have a nice game. That was something that I did throw out on Twitter before snap. Was I threw out some tight ends I liked, and Ingram was one of them. He was the right matchup, and he performed 7 receptions, 8 targets, 46 yards. So at least in PPR he performed. In standard, you're still probably kind of disappointed. But, yeah, I mean, I think Ingram's going to be fine. I guess the James Robinson ETN, it wasn't on our notes. But, I mean, I feel like it's moving more and more towards James Robinson. I mean, it's already kind of moving that direction.
Oh, yeah, it's already gone that direction, right? Which I think ETN could be a decent buy low, but you're not getting that RB1 that that everybody hoped for where they draft him. Some people might be really frustrated and want to cut bait. I think Etienne's still going to be an RB2 when the season's said and done, but James Robinson is the guy that you want. There's little doubt about that at this point.
I mean, I could see Etienne being like the RB24 because everybody else got hurt, but like, I don't think he's actually an RB2 start every week.
Yeah, I mean, we went over this last week. You hate Etienne, and yeah.
I don't hate him. I just feel like James Robinson is so much better. Like, yeah. James Robinson is actually a good running back, and Etienne he's a change of pace guy that's shifty and then gets tackled because he's shifty.
Right. I think Etienne's better than you do, but we went over that last week.
We did. So let's move on to a guy that I also have never really liked, but I was kind of in on because he kept just dropping.
And he plummeted. Went really late. Yeah.
He went plummeted just down draft boards. He's sitting around. He's like the last starting running back on one of the top offenses, and that is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He had 8 rushes, 74 yards, 4 targets, 4 receptions, 44 yards. So over 100 total yards. He gets the 4 receptions to add on top. Where are you at on Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Are you holding? Are you full on sell high? Are you buying high here?
Yeah, you know, insert token comment about depends what you can get, right? As always, it's all relative. But if I had to guess, I would be leaning sell or hold. I'm not sure that anybody is, you know, jumping out of their seat to buy Clyde, and I don't want to give up a running back and not get one back. So it just comes down to, you know, what we can get in return for him. I guess we should give some examples of who would we rather have if we could do like a straight up running back swap for Clyde.
Would you go with David Montgomery, our boy, who had a good bounce back week this week against the Packers?
Yeah, I think that's close. I think that's the right range. I'd take Montgomery, but not a super strong feeling on that because I'm still not excited about the Bears.
Yeah, it's hard to get excited about anything Chicago offense related, but I'm with you. I think I'm going Montgomery there. I mean, he had 80% of the snaps this week, so yeah, I'm going Montgomery there. How about
your guy Cordero? Because you were big on Cordero when we talked about last week.
I was big on Cordero. I thought his place in the offense was pretty set. I was gonna come on and give my apologies for that one. He still got 60% of the snaps, though, so I'm still – I think I'll take Clyde just because of the upside play, but if you needed, like, just a consistent RB2, I feel like it's Cordero more often than it's going to be Clyde. But Tyler Algier got 31% of the snaps and looked good in a few of them, so the Atlanta offense may move that direction as the season progresses, and they're clearly out of it, which I think is already happened.
Yeah, it's concerning that Cordero only got one target last week. That's not exactly what you want to see. You know what we should address, B-Don, is Najee Harris, because it did turn out that was – we'll see. But it seems that was a bit of an overreaction on the show last week when I was not as gung-ho on selling Najee. I mean, I still would sell him. I'm still concerned, but he played last week and he played 71% of snaps and got 15 carries and 6 targets. So it's not exactly sky is falling. I'm definitely concerned about these injuries, though. You know, it's not great when you've got a guy with the Lisfranc injury preseason and then he suddenly has an ankle injury. It's just ominous, right?
Yeah, it's just not what you want to see. And the Pittsburgh offense hasn't been exactly stellar yet either. So, I mean, probably not going to be until they make a quarterback swap, which is probably coming as well. Yeah, I think definitely overreacted, but I'd still try and get out if you can.
Yeah, I think this is a nice sell window. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
I wasn't ready to jump ship for, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson like you last week, but it's still a sell for me.
Yeah, so maybe not Cordarrelle Patterson, but I think you're selling. How about Clyde, since we just talked about him?
You know, I don't think that's like outrageous, but I think you should be able to get quite a bit more for Najee still after he has this kind of usage, and he was probably a first round pick in your league. You know,
yeah, I agree. I think if you're gonna make a trade with Najee, you maybe even like combine him with somebody and go after, you know, a Jonathan Taylor, a Barkley, CMC, Cook, Mixon, you know, one of the true elite guys.
Right. Saquon and Derrick Henry are nice buys after this past week, especially Derrick Henry. Two down games. Go after him, I think.
Yeah, I think Derrick Henry will be fine. But, you know, coming off injury at an age, that's hard. And when you're a bigger guy, it's even harder. So I'm not like racing out to buy Derrick Henry, but I would take him at a discount.
Fair.
Nick Chubb and Aaron Jones, two guys that people worried about. We talked about the time split and how it kind of went the opposite way last week. I feel like this is just going to be how it goes. I feel like we talked about this last week where whoever scores the touchdowns, that's who's going to have the better day. And this time it was Chubb and Aaron Jones.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury. The consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit surprised by how dominant Aaron Jones was, but hot hand kind of a thing. And I think that's, you're right, that's just going to be the way that it goes. When a guy looks good and is dominating, they're going to keep going to him. And that was the case with Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon this week. Chubb, I've been from the start of the preseason higher on Chubb than Aaron Jones. I think that it's going to be less often that Kareem Hunt dominates that backfield than the counterpart situation. I think AJ Dillon will have more big games than Kareem Hunt will. That's just my gut feel based on how these offenses look. I don't think the Browns are going to be playing from behind as much and need to key in on the pass game with Kareem Hunt.
I mean, I was with you until the very last statement where you said the Browns aren't going to be behind much, because the Browns look horrendous.
Yeah, I think the Browns are going to be better than you expect.
You say this every year and they're not. Like, when has this ever happened that you said the Browns are going to be good and then they're actually good or even better than I expect? Because I don't even think that's ever happened.
They had that one year.
The one playoff year, which started this whole thing. And then they've been awful since then.
Yeah, the Browns.
I tried to tell you, man.
I mean, they might not. They might not win these games.
Like, you literally just said Green Bay is going to be behind more than Cleveland. Like, what?
No, because if we look at the Packers situation, theoretically, AJ Dillon should do better when they have a lead. Of course, it didn't turn out necessarily that way.
Again, I feel like that's not necessarily true. Like, I feel like I feel like this narrative that AJ Dillon is a better rusher than Aaron Jones is out there, and like, that's not true yet. Like, AJ Dillon may get there. Aaron Jones is still better. This isn't a Javonte Melvin Gordon situation. Like, Aaron Jones is better than AJ Dillon.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue against that after his dominance against the Bears this past week, you know?
Yeah. All right, let's move on, because we've talked about this one and we kind of have our spots here. I don't have a problem with Chubb or Aaron Jones. I love both of them, but they're both amazing running backs. Next topic is a older running back who didn't really
Let me put a little bit more color into that situation, since we haven't quite beat this horse fully to dead. To clarify my position here, I think that the Green Bay hot hand situation is stronger than the Cleveland hot hand situation. So if AJ Dillon comes out and is looking good, I think they'll stick with him if he has a couple big runs, just like they stuck with Aaron Jones against the Bears. Versus Cleveland, I feel like Chubb's spot in that offense is pretty secure. His touches are pretty secure unless they're getting like totally blown out. So while I'm not saying that the Browns are going to be good and have a good record, I think they're going to be in close games. You know, they got a good offensive line. They're going to put some points on the board. They're going to stick to their run game. You know, they don't just desert it. So I don't know if that's any clearer than whatever madness that I said before.
I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I just don't agree. Already, Aaron Jones has had a higher snap percentage in both games, and I believe has more snap, about the same snaps total. So yeah, Aaron Jones had more snaps this year than Nick Chubb in like a one game both ways, where the game script differed. Like, I don't ever see Aaron Jones getting taken out of the game for any reason. Even if AJ Dillon's hot, they're not just going to bench Aaron Jones. Whereas if the Browns fall behind by three touchdowns, there's a chance Nick Chubb is getting benched.
That's a fair statement. Yeah.
Like that's my concern on Chubb. Whereas I just don't feel like Green Bay loves Aaron Jones. They paid him a ton of money, even knowing they had AJ Dillon there. They're not just all of a sudden going to be like, no, you're on the bench for the whole second half.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying.
Okay. Moving on to a guy or a situation where I think maybe the team does need to just sit one guy down and tell him he's going to sit on the bench. Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard. I think it's time to free Tony Pollard. Like, we got to get this movement more steam than it has, because he is so much better than Zeke.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I've never been like a huge Zeke guy in the past 3 years, I guess, since he started to have a little bit of a downtrend.
Yeah. We saw the decline.
Yeah. I just don't think he's going anywhere. You know, I do like Tony Pollard a lot, and I'd like to see him get more work. I'm with you. I just don't think that it's realistic that Zeke is going to take a back seat.
So here's the scenario that I'm seeing. And first of all, it's prefaced by the fact that Dallas can cut Zeke after the season. Like, his contract is structured that this is the last year Zeke has guaranteed that he's a Dallas Cowboy. So that's the first thing. Pollard only had 39% of the snaps. So he's not there yet in regards to the snaps, but he's out producing Zeke in less snaps. I just feel like there's a change coming eventually. I don't know when Dallas embraces it, because Jerry does love Zeke. Dak loves Zeke. Like, I don't know if Cowboys fans love Zeke at this point, or if they want to see Tony Pollard. But I do feel like Zeke does have some command there where he's just not going to disappear. But I think it could switch from 60-40 and Zeke to 60-40 Pollard, especially with a rookie quarterback. I mean, they may want to give him a little bit of a release valve. And I feel like people always say it's because of blocking, and Zeke is a great blocker, but so is Tony Pollard.
Tony Pollard's going to have his weeks. I mean, you said it. I don't think Zeke is going anywhere. So it's going to be a bit of a tough situation all season, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like if you're going to start a Dallas Cowboy running back, unless Zeke's going to fall in the end zone, like, he's not going to have big weeks. He needs to fall in the end zone like three times.
Which, I mean, he doesn't need to fall in three times. Two times will do it.
I mean, it will. But if he falls in two times and has like 40 yards, it's still not a huge day.
It'll be a pretty good day.
It's a very solid day. I'll take it every week. Yeah. But that's, I feel like that's what he needs. Like, he's not going to put up 140 yards. He's not going to get the volume. And he was never a long rush guy.
He's a low-end RB2, you know, it just based on usage. Yeah, it sounds like you've got him more as a flex or, you know, just kind of send him out to pasture.
he's fallen in the flex territory for me. I'm not ready to say he's fully out, but I don't love him. Yeah, I definitely don't love him. I think he, you know, if he stays healthy again, he probably just ends up RB2 just out of sheer injury and everybody else falling around him. But I don't think week to week. I feel like, okay, let me throw some names at you. Because, like, if we're looking at RB2, we already talked about, like, Kareem Hunt. Would you take Kareem Hunt over him?
PPR, obviously. Half PPR, yes. Standard, I'll still give the edge to Zeke.
So, pretty much. How about Antonio Gibson and Miles Sanders? I feel like those are both yeses for you.
Yeah, you know I love those guys.
So those both guys that, like, were below that are climbing above him.
Well, I had both of them ahead of Zeke to start the season because, you know, I love those guys.
What about Jeff Wilson?
Yeah, I think so. I think Jeff Wilson feels a little, you know, I like that offense a little bit more than I like the Cowboys without Dak, so.
Yeah, I think the only problem with Jeff Wilson is there is no guarantee at all what Shanahan's going to do game to game.
Yeah, there's risk with both of these guys, so it's the right range.
Yeah, so I feel like that's kind of where we're looking, and that's like RB24.
Right.
So he's outside. I think he's outside my RB2 range now officially.
It's close to it. I mean, I got him at the low end, like high end flex, sure. I mean, we're splitting hairs at that point, right?
Yeah, I think so. Mike Williams, he showed that nonsense about him being cooked was just nonsense because he was the true alpha without Keenan Allen. The question is, can he do it if Keenan Allen comes back?
I think he can. I mean, I do think that it hurts his fantasy upside slightly, but we know Keenan Allen he's that guy that's going to get the volume and he'll see some action in the end zone, but Mike Williams is such a great red zone target. You know, he got shut down by Nate Hobbs in week one, but he's back, man. I was so in on Mike Williams this year.
I mean, I can't blame you. He's always been a physical freak. Like he's one of those guys I've been waiting on to kind of pop. And he's always been with Keenan Allen, which has always capped what he could do as far as an upside play. But I do like Mike Williams as a talent, but I also feel like this is what you get with Mike Williams. Like, you have to start him every week and you just have to accept that there's gonna be duds out there. Like, he's gonna put up some like two reception for 30 yard games. He did it last year. He's done it pretty much throughout his career where he'll have some duds, but man, you got to have him in there because otherwise you miss out on the 30-point games.
Right, and there's also some injury risk with Mike Williams always. You know, he gets hurt quite often.
Yeah, but again, I don't really – I know you kind of look at that. I tend to ignore injury risk unless it's a, like, chronic, repetitive thing, and a lot of his injuries tend to be kind of the more random variety.
Yeah, I hope you're right.
So we're moving on to Carson Wentz. Let's talk about – the quarterback who is just, I mean, he's been great. It pains me. Like, it hurts me to physically say those words. Like, Carson Wentz has been, and I'm not going to say it a second time. But
been okay.
30 for 337, three touchdowns, one pick against the Lions. Preface it by saying he started against Jacksonville and Detroit. So, where are you at on Carson Wentz? Are you in on Carson Wentz completely, or is it still more matchup based? Is he higher? He's got to be higher than last week at least.
I can't even remember what we said last week, but
we said like low QB2, probably more like high end QB3 range still. But we did say we like this matchup and probably starting.
I think I was maybe a little bit higher on him last week, but probably, I can't remember. I hate
Carson Wentz. I mean, that just makes sense.
Yeah, so I probably was, yeah. I think he's still pretty much in the same range, I think, because he's not a QB1 to me still. So he falls into that streaming bucket, you know, matchup-based, like you said. I guess it's worth noting they were behind in this game. So he threw 46 times. There was a point in this game where I looked and Terry McLaurin had, I think, zero targets. He definitely had zero receptions deep into this game. It made no sense. So Wentz was not having like a great game. A lot of this came in garbage time. So I don't necessarily, I'm not giving him a big win here in this one.
Full on Carson Wentz style. I mean, that's just kind of how it comes with him. But I do think there's at least a little hope. I think he has the right weapons around him to put up some days that are going to be big. I'm with you. He's not a QB1. I just don't trust the consistency. And again, it was Jacksonville, Detroit, not really willing to give him the full pass. Cause he did look terrible for about 2.5 quarters of this game. This week, he is going to Philadelphia at home. How do you feel about him this week? Would you start him or would you go with, say, like Russell against San Francisco?
I go with Russ. I think Russ is due for a breakout.
Yeah.
So it may not happen this week, but when it does, you know, he's going to go off for 3 touchdowns and 350 yards, and you're going to be kicking yourself if he's on your bench.
All right. What about Justin Fields versus Houston?
That's a pretty good matchup for Fields. I think a slight edge to Wentz, but coin flip territory there.
Yeah, I think it's Wentz on the upside play just because the Chicago offense has looked so stale and boring that I just don't see upside to do more than – I mean, I think Fields is a good quarterback. I think he's going to be great, but the Chicago offense right now is not predicated on letting him be great.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right. What about Carr versus Tennessee?
I guess Carr. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's Carr for me as well. All right. So I feel like we're in the same range still on wins. He's moved up slightly, but still a little bit more matchup dependent. But it is nice to see that he's had a couple of big weeks, so at least that's in there.
Yeah.
Which gets him to move up. We got the Breece Carter swap here. I mean, they've been just it's going to be a mess, I feel like, just week in, week out, figuring out the Jets as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, that's standard for the Jets, right? If I got to pick one for the rest of the season, it's Breece Hall. We know he's got that upside, but not excited about either of them.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Carter still got, you know, 5 receptions to Breece Hall's 1. That I feel like it's a very clear split. So it's going to be week to week. And again, Breece Hall found the end zone. Michael Carter didn't. It's just going to be that kind of thing. And the Jets offense, while having weapons, I don't believe they're going to be a high powered offense quite yet.
Right. Exactly.
All right. We talked about Jeff Wilson. We'll skip past him. How about the Mike Gesicki bounce back here? I actually predicted Gesicki would be fine. I know I got some pushback on that, but it was the right matchup for him. And he had a solid performance here. Where are you at on Mike Gesicki? Everybody who has ever listened to me talk knows that I absolutely love tight ends that line up outside. Nobody does it as much as Gesicki almost.
Yeah, I mean, I like Mike Gesicki as a player. I don't love this situation here because Tyreek Hill and Waddle they're going to get keyed in on. So he's the third option at best, right?
Yeah, I mean, at best he's third, but I also feel like after watching this last week, teams are just going to be dropping 2 safeties every single play. So he's going to get covered by linebackers, and he'll beat almost every linebacker one-on-one.
Yeah, I don't know where he falls in my rankings, but I'm probably not starting Gesicki anywhere.
Okay, I will say it's a little bit more matchup-based because it's tight ends are kind of weird, but I like Gesicki. I think he's a tight end 1 for me rest of season.
Really?
I can't really come up with 12 guys that I want over him. I mean, the clear ones are Andrews, Kelsey. I mean, I say Pitts is still clear, but I know that people are yelling at their teams about him.
Goddard is 6. Higbee.
Maybe
Hockenson.
I'd probably still go the opposite. I've never loved Higbee. Hockenson probably above, although he's been slow to get out of the gate too.
Freiermuth, Ertz, Gerald Everett.
I don't know that I have any of them above him. Not a single one of them.
See, I got those guys ahead of him.
I don't think they're – I mean, you know me. I just don't think they're that – like, I think Gesicki's really good at being a pass-catching tight end. I don't think they are. Or at least Ertz used to be. He's not anymore.
Yeah, see, for me, Gesicki falls into this bucket with Evan Engram and Irv Smith, Logan Thomas, that kind of range, which there's upside, but it's just there's going to be weeks where you're not happy that you started.
Yeah, see, I like all those guys better than a lot of the guys you listed. So that's our disconnect, is that you have, like, the Higbee, Freiermuth, Everett, maybe Kmet, I don't know where you are, him group. Higher than I do, and I have, like, the Logan Thomas, Evan Engram, Gesicki, Dalton Schultz group higher. Maybe Dalton Schultz is above them for both of us, but, like, I have those guys higher, it sounds like, than you do.
Yeah, I mean, this is tight end conversation, so it can change fast, but usage based, the guys that I mentioned, they seem to be a big part of their offense, and I'm just not sure Gesicki is. You know, it was a little bit better this week, but week one was not great.
Yeah, I mean, week one, I tried to tell everybody not to start him. I don't know if anybody listened, but Gesicki just sits versus New England. That's what he does. When Miami plays New England, Gesicki sits his ass on the bench every single time. So I'm not worried about it, but we'll move on. Allen Robinson, I don't know where you were on him. I think we talked about him very briefly last week, but he had a solid performance. Not anything amazing, but at least not the goose egg he laid in week one.
Yeah, I thought he was a buy, but it was not like a guy that I was going after aggressively. So about what we had hoped for, what we expected. I don't think he's going to be a surprise wide receiver one or anything like that. Cooper Kupp he's a beast. He's going to take everything.
Yeah, I was completely out on Allen Robinson. I think he's cooked. I have not seen anything to the contrary in two games yet to change my mind to say he's not cooked. He got a touchdown on a very nice play design. He did get 4 for 53, which is fine, but I feel like there's going to be a lot of, like, 3 or 4 receptions, 30 to 55 yards. Does he find the end zone? And he's going to have to do it with play design, because I feel like he's cooked.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything you're saying is unfair, but really what that comes, they throw a lot and he's playing a lot, right? 97% of snaps in week one, 90% in week two. So I think just by default, he's going to fall into back end wide receiver two, wide receiver three, we call it, you know, if we want to be a little more conservative, which not super exciting, but there's utility in that in some leagues. So
I can see him being like a wide receiver three, but he was getting drafted as a clear wide receiver two. And that's where the disconnect is with me and his expectations versus what I think you're getting. So I'm saying I would sell high based on him getting a little bit more usage and grabbing a touchdown. It sounds like you're more in the hold situation.
Again, depends what you can get, right?
Just say one or the other.
probably hold. I mean, if you can get a wide receiver two for him, I'm selling. So I just don't know that you can.
Yeah, I don't think he ever should have been in that conversation.
Yeah, I didn't draft. There were so many guys that I liked more than him where he was going. So I'm generally with you. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I liked any number of guys going after him. So he just never got to me, which is why I was out on him. I mean, I guess if we're looking at names here, would you rather have him or Curtis Samuel?
Oh, I think Allen Robinson for me there.
Yeah, I'm going Curtis Samuel. How about him or Tyler Lockett, who is another guy who had a nice bounce back performance?
That's probably the right range. Slightly into Robinson.
All right. How about Juju?
Juju. I'm still big on Juju. I think Juju's a great buy right now.
Okay. So maybe I'm slightly higher, but we're still, it sounds like, in the same tier, maybe one separate. Yeah, I just don't like Allen Robinson. I didn't want him on any of my rosters for the draft price. Let's go on and worry the concern level here. 1 to 10. We did this last week. I feel like this is a good quick hitter to end the show on, DT. Russ Wilson, 1 to 10. It sounds like you're leaning closer to the lower side.
Yeah, probably like a 2 or 3. A little concerned, but not much.
I'm going to say I'm like a solid 3.5 right now. I'm not panicking, but I'm definitely potentially sitting him if I have, you know, if you drafted Russ and then you got Tua later, I'd sit Russ down for Tua most weeks. I think we talked about that specific one earlier, so I'm not going to go too much into that. How about Austin Eckler? A little bit bounce back here, but still not getting the usage maybe we thought we were going to get.
It was pretty similar to Russ for me, 2 to 3 range.
Okay. I'm going to say I'm pretty much in the same as Russ, but again, that's a little bit higher than you. So I'm like in the 3.5 range, because if they're not going to force feed him into the lineup and they're going to share touches, I just don't know that he's going to be the elite running back that we want, because he's not going to get as much work on the ground as he did last year. Like, they had nobody sitting around that could even like carry the ball that was healthy enough last year. This year, it seems like they got, you know, at least a couple guys in Kelly and Michelle that they're okay occasionally giving the ball.
Right. I think I could get a little bit more concerned if I owned him in standard, but I just think the receiving work is going to be there.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. You know, he had 9 receptions for 55 yards. That could definitely kind of keep him in plenty of PPR matches for you, or even half PPR. He just catches so much. And the Chargers, although I don't know. I mean, I feel like the Chargers are going to blow out some teams where he might be on the bench. But that's the weekly discussion we'll get to in those weeks. How about Kyle Pitts? Yikes.
I'm still not super concerned. I still think it's going to come, and I think you do too. So 4-ish, a little more concerned than these other guys.
I'm going the opposite way. I'm going to go with like a 1 or a 2 on Kyle Pitts. I'm not concerned. They're going to get him involved. He is too good to not get involved in this offense. As Drake London kind of establishes himself as a true threat, teams are not going to be able to double and triple Kyle Pitts like they have been to start the season. Elijah Moore.
Similar. 3.
Okay, I'm going to go like 4, like a solid 4. This first one outside of the 3.5. I just, I'm a little worried that he is becoming the WR2 quicker than I thought he would. Like, I really thought he'd be the WR1 this year with maybe Wilson kind of sneaking in as like a sharing co-1 at the end. But it feels like Wilson's already passing Elijah Moore. This could all change when Flacco takes a bench seat again, but I'm a little concerned.
Yeah, you make a fair point. But also, flip side, you could say the same thing you said about Pitts with Drake London. You know, teams having to scheme for Garrett Wilson a little bit more.
That's true.
You know, kind of ebb and flow, right?
That's true. That's fair. So that one monitor, but I don't know. There's something about the Moore situation, because I feel like him and Wilson are both good wide receivers. Neither is necessarily separating from the other, so it may just be a co-1 situation. I just thought it would take longer. Matt Ryan, like, woo, he looked real bad. He got me negative 10 points in the Scott Fish Bowl because of all their quarterback penalties. It was bad. It was real bad.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have Pitts, so that's the case for him, but I was not excited about Matt Ryan in the first place. So 7, I guess, like, I really don't want him on my team.
Yeah, and you mean Pittman?
You Pittman. Said Pitt, yeah, sorry.
Yes, I know what you mean, but just clarify before everybody yells at you. He meant Pittman. I think he'll be better days are coming, but I kind of thought Matt Ryan was going to have a little bit of resurgence with a run game and a good O-line, and they haven't really run the ball like I thought they would, and they're not really the O-line that they have been. So. Until those two things change, I don't know. We'll see. Matt Ryan needs to be running a lot of play action off of Jonathan Taylor, not dropping back 5-7 steps.
Right. Their offense was just not good, which, you know, concerned for Jonathan Taylor even a little bit if this is the Matt Ryan that we're going to have, right?
Yeah, a little bit. And, I mean, we don't know. It doesn't sound like the Pittman injury is going to be, you know, taking too long, but I mean, he needs to get back. He needs to get back because they have nobody.
Yeah, they need. Yeah, they need Pittman for sure.
It was so bad. Like, they're just running on everybody. And please, people, Paris Campbell's so bad. Stop trying to make it happen. Cordell Patterson. We kind of talked about him a little bit. Where are you at on Cordell Patterson? Oh, I was obviously just all over him last week and willing to trade for him. 1 to 10, where you at?
Concern level 7. Again, that one target is very concerning. You want to see him getting that work in the passing game, but he'll have his weeks. It's just that consistency is probably not going to be there, right?
Yeah, the consistency I thought would be there just because he runs, he catches, he does everything for the Atlanta offense. I may have overestimated Atlanta's will to move on to whoever the hell is going to be next in their offense. So we will see how the pass catching numbers look. I'm still not like, I feel like you're panicking a little bit more than I am. I'm at like a 5 or maybe a 6 if I was really counting on him. But he should be like your flex or a very low end RB2 if you were, you know, wide receiver heavy.
Right. Maybe even a bench option.
Yeah. So I can't panic too much on a guy that was kind of like found money.
Fair.
All right. So DT and I argued for almost an hour. If you have any specific questions, you can always go to the comments on Razzball and leave them there. You can come to Twitter. I am, of course, at RazzBeaton. DT is at DonkeyTeeth87. If you're watching us on YouTube, you're wondering why the hell am I telling you that? Because it's listed below our page where you can go, youtube.com/RazzballFantasy, and you can subscribe to the football show there or the baseball show or the Not Not News podcast or whatever the hell you want. It's all there. Actually, I don't know what Not Not News is, but we're here for you. If you have any specific questions, tune in again to the live show. I tuned in, sporadically to the live show this week. It was great. They were doing good work as the guests kind of filtered in. I saw DT, you jumped in on the back end of that one.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, if you got any start sit questions, just jump in there. It's like a constant flow of new people coming in asking questions. I don't know how Bobby does it for like 3 hours. He's a machine, yeah. But
we'll see if Bobby keeps that up for 3 hours or if we maybe reduce it down to maybe 2 or like swap out some hosts or something. Maybe give him a break in the middle. We'll have to figure something out for Bobby because it sounded like 3 hours was the end of his voice.
Yeah, it did.
All right, everybody. Best of luck in your waivers and your matchups this week. Again, come find us via specific stuff and good luck. Talk to you later.
Later, be done.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.